Hey everybody, I'm Corbin.
And I'm Camry.
And we are siblings reconnecting with the joy of our Disney-filled childhood. Join us as we discuss, debate, and rediscover the second star to the right. This is The Neverland Files. Welcome back, everyone.
Hello.
To the Neverland Files podcast.
We're here. And if you hear whistling, we apologize because we have a whistling window sitting next to us.
As the breeze goes through past the house, it whistles because of the ridiculous windows that we're sitting next to. But yes. We're happy to be here to review the movie Atlantis.
I almost said Emperor's New Groove. Oh, it's
we already
be a
did
long
that
day.
One.
We did, and we were talking about it right before we started. Atlantis
from 2001, which this is an underrated period. These one or two, well, not one or two, three years,
maybe
this 1 year period.
The early, yeah. I would say the underratedness starts from after Lion King through the late 1990s and through the early 2000s. Like people, Mulan and Tarzan, you know, I mean, they're good, but people just don't talk about them like they should.
Uh-huh. Yes, they're not
and
classics.
And then you get into like this movie and Treasure Planet and Emperor's New Groove. Like you just have a...
They had a good run, but it doesn't show up that like that
yeah,
when it comes to
people,
box office.
People call this the dry period. This is the Debbie Downer. But Atlantis is the movie in our first episode of the second season. We predicted this would be the movie that would be our Treasure Planet of season two. This movie that we like and we hope that we expose you guys to and you realize that it actually is a good movie that deserves some credit. So we'll see if our prediction is even true with
yeah,
ourselves.
I was going to say that does taint our comments and reviews a little bit later because
we'll
there's so much
bias.
Stood
up because I hadn't watched this one for a minute. I was going solely based off of childhood nostalgia when I...
Which there is
that.
A lot of that.
Yeah, yes. Okay.
Are you ready to jump into story time?
Story time. Okay. Corbin, box office.
Box office, 2001.
Oh, guys, it's going to be cringy.
This was a pleasant exercise for myself because last week we were trying to do box office with Snow White where we had no idea.
Yeah, there's like not really a box office. No one was keeping track at the
time. So 2001 was a little bit more current and so we could get
actual
some
actual statistics.
We could get some numbers. So number one in 2001, the number one movie was Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
Oh my gosh, that's charming. That makes me happy.
And then we had Shrek, Monsters, Inc., Rush Hour 2, Mummy Returns, so on and so forth.
Mummy Returns was in the top five?
Yes,
interesting.
It was.
Interesting.
Yes. It came out earlier in the year. It came out in May, so they had a little bit more time to make some more money. Because Lord of the Rings came out at number 10, but it came out like a week before.
Is this the first Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Guys, but can you imagine a world without that Peter Jackson? Like, it's hard to believe that movie ever didn't exist.
It's quite a lovely story. Anyways.
It's quite lovely.
Atlantis came in at number 26, which
Ouch.
Is... kind of it came out in June so
yeah.
It had a half of a year and it only came in at number 26. Number 25 was Save the Last Dance. I don't know,
I think it's like a 90s romance comedy situation with
it sounds like a war
Richard
movie.
Greer, I think,
probably,
yeah.
And then number 27, AI, artificial intelligence, was just below Atlantis. So that's where it kind of came in, and that's why it's seen as this dry period for these movies.
Yes, because Monsters, Inc. was the big... Monsters, Inc. was Pixar at the time.
Number
and
three,
then,
yep.
And then you have Shrek, which is a DreamWorks, and Disney Animation came off Snow White. And what is it, 80 plus years later is... at the bottom of the box office.
Yeah, it's struggling. So, but it's still worth seeing it much more so than a lot of the movies that it was surrounded by.
I think, this is not new to those who know me, I just have movie tastes that I'm always interested by the box office, but it never deters me from movies. Like if a movie didn't do well at the box office, but I still like it, I'm like, tough. Like, I own up to the fact that I'm a weirdo and really like this movie.
It's almost like a badge of honor.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm different.
I
didn't go
different.
With mainstream. I, like Frozen, for example, you're like, okay,
Whatevs, Frozen.
We don't like it because of how popular and how much money it made, but it really it's good. It's good. I think
sometimes we give movie critics a little too much power in determining what we like and what we don't like. And I say, take back the power, folks.
I don't understand what their criteria. How do you become a movie critic?
I know, and I've taken film classes and still have tried to like understand it. And I'm like, no, you're basically all just, they're like us. I mean, we're movie critics, blah, blah. But, I mean, it's just our opinion, really.
Yeah, it's just opinions. Anyways. They base it in some structure.
I have a lot of interesting story time because I actually watched, there is like an hour documentary on YouTube.
On the YouTube.
That I think is from the DVD special.
Okay, like, what do you got?
All that stuff. I'm curious. I was very interested. Okay, so your directors are the two guys that stepped in and did Beauty and the Beast. I mean, they were like super, do you remember that story? They were like super young and they needed a director because the movie was going down the toilet. And so they just like threw these two like storyboard artists in there.
Oh, wow. What an opportunity.
Yeah. And they just kind of were like, okay. So it's those guys.
And they get like an Academy Award.
But then they also ended up doing Lion King and Hunchback. So, I mean, this is a credible team of people
here. Yes.
So they said after Hunchback came out, they immediately, like, they had so much fun, and off of Lion King and Hunchback, they'd gotten this team of people together of like writers and directors and animators, and they just had such a good experience together. They immediately wanted to pick up another project, and so that they could keep their core group together instead of everybody splitting off and going and doing other projects. Mm-hmm. And so they started brainstorming and talking about movies and movies that they loved when they were younger, and how, and they just kind of swung back around to this idea of like, man, wasn't that great when Indiana Jones was in theaters, and like you had these adventure movies and like the old adventure movies of Walt Disney with like Swiss Family Robinson and 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea, like these movies that are just about adventure and excitement, and it's not a musical. We love musicals, but like we've done three of them and like we're just ready to explore something new. And so that's kind of where this idea came from. Is them brainstorming and being like, you know what? Walt Disney was all about innovation. And after he got something down, he would move on to something new and push himself. And they're like, we've done the Disney musical and we want to move into an animated adventure movie, which really kind of hadn't been done yet. Like you wouldn't get Indiana Jones in an animated screen. They hadn't really seen that happen yet. So they wanted to go in a different direction. This is what they were saying in their interview.
Okay.
So this is kind of where this came from, this idea of archaeology and
shifting gears, pivoting a little bit,
pivoting away from the musical.
Okay, that's very interesting.
Yes,
I like that.
Hold on a second, I just lost my notes. So they kind of built off of the Jules Verne tradition. Jules Verne is a French science fiction writer from like
Journey to the Center of the Earth.
He did 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Around the World in 80 Days. They actually, Journey to the Center of the Earth, they were like, ooh, like, let's do that. Like, let's take a team to the center of the Earth. Atlantis hadn't even entered the picture yet. So that's actually where they started with, is that idea of going into the core of the Earth.
Okay.
And then Atlantis just kind of came out of that through there. And it's like an hour long and it's really interesting. Like they came up with the language. There is the Atlantean language they came up with. They had a guy come in and make it audibly, and then also had like a storyboard artist do the written language that's an actual language. So like there was a lot of, they studied like all the mythology of Atlantis and got into like all the conspiracy theories about like where is Atlantis, doesn't actually exist. Like they went down the deep dark hole.
And well, obviously it's an Iceland.
No, they found the journal in Iceland.
Oh, yes. Sorry,
Atlantis is not in Iceland.
Oh.
There's many, many theories, but I don't think any of them involve Iceland.
No. It's the ones I was reading, it's out, just outside the Strait of Gibraltar.
That one, there's also Santorini right off the coast of Greece. And I actually, because I'm kind of into this stuff, like I watch not like conspiracy theory
Jeremy's
stuff.
All in.
But I'm all in on like the adventure and the archaeology. I almost studied archaeology in school. And there's some talk of there being like a possible Atlantis off the coast of Japan. These places where you get big earthquakes and tsunamis where you can just like wipe out. Corbin is literally yawning right now. Where you can wipe out an entire civilization in like one swoop. So yeah.
I didn't know you were quite the explorer. That's really funny to me. Not funny, but interesting.
Well, wow, Cameron,
we're both
funny.
Like very, we're very much homebodies. So that to see,
I am
the
a
dirt,
homebody,
like,
and I wish
off.
I was more adventurous. And if I you can were be adventurous through books
and movies
and documentaries.
Well, and this all originates from my understanding. Atlantis originates from Plato, right?
Yes, like, he is the first one that writes down and talks about this idea of a
like
place called Atlantis disappearing.
They'll refer to it. But it all ties back to Plato,
mm-hmm.
bringing this up in some of his writings about this.
Right.
This
and there's
utopian.
Like, it apparently was like a story from his dad, which is a story from a friend. So people are like, oh, brother, like it wasn't even really based on anything. But the fact is there is actual like archaeological evidence of places, whether they're called Atlantis or not, that like literally civilizations who have been wiped out in minutes when like a volcano erupts and a tsunami comes in and...
Wow.
Just
okay.
Completely wipes places out. So
next week, if I'm by myself, it's because Carrie got the bug. And she's
God,
traipsing
like,
around the earth.
Give me my scuba gear. I'm going to go find it.
I'm going to go find Atlantis.
Oh, I didn't know you didn't know that about me. That's funny.
Well,
okay.
Now I can tie back like National Geographic, some of the shows you like to watch. I'm like, oh, okay. That
yes,
makes sense. There
yes,
you go.
Yes, yes.
So there you go.
So yeah, so there was a lot of interesting world building that went into this concept. And I just like this idea of them looking at like movies that I love, like Indiana Jones and
another movie,
being like, let's dive in.
Well, another movie like National Treasure. It's a
yes!
really fun and entertaining film.
National Treasure
film.
Is so fun.
And it's all conspiracy theories and things that you're like, I don't
but
know.
But also, like,
but
there's
it's tied
just
together.
Enough truth that you're like, oh,
you're like
my
looking
gosh.
At your dollar bills.
Yeah,
and
you're like, oh.
Why didn't I see this before?
Yeah. So fun. I love it. Okay. Any more story time stuff?
I watched a little thing on Disney Plus about the intro to the movie was actually going to be a longer, where it had Vikings looking for Atlantis.
Yeah.
They didn't add much to it, but they cut it out. And it was fun to hear the producer talk about why they cut it out, because they had a writer come in that watched. They animated, they colored everything. Mm-hmm. They were going to put it in.
Yeah, it's like a full, the Viking shot is a full animated shot.
Yeah, it's not like the sketches.
Yeah.
And the writer's like, I don't care. Like, it takes so long to get to Atlantis that mm-hmm. we need to cut out something at the beginning because
I don't care about Atlantis by the time you get
yes,
to it.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought that I like the back end or the stories about how we've modified and adjusted the story.
Yes,
so.
Which is interesting because there's actually, I've read some reviews of some people that were like, this one guy wrote this whole thing about like, why did this movie not succeed? Because Disney, like, this is one of those movies, again, kind of like Treasure Planet, where they had, like, theme park stuff that they were thinking about. They were thinking
about...
It had
a huge budget, too.
Yeah, it had a huge budget, and they were thinking, like, this is the tomorrow... This we're going to put this in the submarine area with Tomorrowland.
Oh, wow.
Like, we're gonna make that Atlantis. I know, part of me's like, Finding Nemo, you're so charming, but give me some adventure, for heaven's sakes. And then the movie flopped, and this guy's opinion was that like he had watched the same scene and he was like, they took out all the good stuff. Like they took out the Vikings, and apparently there was all these monsters they came in contact with on their way to Atlantis. And as I was watching the making of, they talked about how they had to take out all of these monsters that they come across on their way to Atlantis, because you don't get to Atlantis until you're over halfway through the movie. And then you're not even in Atlantis. So for a movie that's about Atlantis, and you're not even spending time there, that for them as storytellers was a problem. So they had to apparently take out, quote, all the exciting stuff. So that was his opinion. I don't know.
Just as I was starting this movie, I saw that there's the sequel, Milo's Return.
Oh, jeez. I have not seen that.
I haven't seen it.
I'm frightened.
Pumped. I want to see it.
Are
I
you?
Yeah, I want to
okay.
see it.
Because I've seen stills of the animation, and I'm just like,
oh, is it? Well, I'm sure it's not
the
up to par.
Yeah,
yeah. But I'm excited to see it because I do like the adventure. Who cares? Like the
That's
story and stuff like that. Yeah, there's going
to
be
gaps.
Guys,
we're going to have to. Me and Corbin haven't seen that. We'll have to give it a shot now.
Yeah, we're going to do it.
Yeah. So that's my. I mean, this has a great voice cast. It's. I mean, there's like a lot of recognizable names: Michael J. Fox, James Gardner, Leonard Nimoy. Is that his name? There's a Star Trekkie that is going to hate me, but
oh, yeah,
I
yeah.
was shocked when I saw. I didn't even realize he was in that in this movie. So I mean, there's clips in this making of Michael J. Fox doing his lines, and it just blows my mind because I'm like, it's so fascinating to watch somebody stand in a room by themselves and act out these parts in a t-shirt and jeans.
Here's my question to you.
Yeah.
when you see people acting or giving their voice acting, do you think it's easier or harder than what you perceive? To me, I kind of am like, I think if I gave me a couple days in front of a microphone, I could figure it out. But I bet it's harder than you think. But I just, I for some reason, I'm like, I think I could do that.
Well, they make it sound so effortless that you're like, oh, this must be so natural. But then you see the circumstances that they're in and you're like, you gotta like, I think voice acting, you have to commit. Like,
you gotta
like
be
I
all
said,
in.
You're in a t-shirt and jeans in front of a stand with papers and all these people sitting in a recording studio watching you and saying, okay, can you do that with a little more? And like, you have to give it 150% with your voice every single time. Like, you're pretty vulnerable. There's no costuming. There's no other actors around you to distract from what you're doing. It's you and a pile of paper. So,
and the feedback. People are like, oh, that was a little flat.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're supposed to be sad. You sounded happy.
There was this one clip where the girl who plays Audrey, like there was just pause and she's like kind of smiling uncomfortable. And she's like, am I even in the right ballpark?
I respect
so anyways,
that.
That's, voice acting is a pretty
Audrey's
cool
voice
thing.
Is Jacqueline Obradors.
Yes. Okay. Yes. There you go. She's like,
and then you can just see like they're like have their hands over their heads, their faces, and they're just like, oh my gosh, how do we fire her? That's what they would be doing with me. It'd be like, who picked this guy?
Who
All
picked
right.
this guy? Okay.
Should we get some grades?
Let's give some grades. We've realized that we have completely ruined our grading because we were grading everyone. We have limited it. Back to three people.
This is what I picture us doing with the last few movies.
We just want to talk about everybody
all
the time.
We're teachers at a school, and we're just walking into every classroom, handing out grades to everybody. And so it takes forever. People are like, what are you talking about? So we're going to try and limit it just to our
class. So remember, if we don't talk about your character, it's because they're incomplete, and we weren't positive or negative either way. They just kind of were forgettable.
We'll try again next year.
Yeah. Okay, here we go, Corbin. Outstanding.
Outstanding.
Up to three people.
Oh, you okay? You okay?
I had to add an extra. Casts are so hard for me.
You had to.
I had to choose.
We said two before we started, but then three made it in. So okay, all right. Outstanding. My first one. I'm gonna give it to Milo.
Me too.
I like Milo.
I do too.
And I really like. I almost consider his glasses its own separate character. I don't know what it is about animation, but in many cases, when there's a character with glasses, when he was like when he gets on the boat
and
he vomits
puking.
His
carrots.
Glasses.
Why is it always carrots?
I didn't even eat carrots. His glasses fly off his face as his face goes out of the frame. And then he obviously comes up and his glasses are still on. So glasses, I'm always fascinated by that. You notice.
There's like an invisible string that's attaching them
like
to their character.
Smee's glasses. When he's rowing the boat, his glasses are all over the place. They never fall off. So again, Milo loved him and his glasses and his voice acting was really well done with Michael J. Fox.
It is. I'm not a huge Back to the Future person. And what I mean by that is I think I've only seen the first movie and I think I've only seen it once. It just wasn't a movie that was around, so for me this is Michael J. Fox and he is so good.
Like he's like that 150% you said, he's all in.
Yeah,
you really
oh
believe-
my goodness, watching him do this is the scene I watched him do was the one where the king has just died and he's talking to Sweet and he's like, I have just single-handedly ruined an entire civilization. The king is dead. The princess is gone. Is there anything I've forgotten? And then he brings up that he broke the truck or whatever. And he's like, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I watching him do that, it was just like, this is amazing. I completely agree. I like Milo. And I like that he's not your traditional hero.
There were moments where it was bordering on the edge of a little bit annoying. It was just getting close. But they did a good job of not going too far. I mean, obviously, they established that he's a nerd. He's very passionate about...
guys, he works in a museum.
Yeah, he's very passionate about Atlantis and all these things. But it wasn't overboard. Sometimes you skirt into that line and then all of a sudden you're like...
I'm trying to think of another character that is like him in Disney animation. Even in, like, Pixar. I think Milo is very... he's a very unique male character.
He is, because usually they take... like Chris Hemsworth and they make him into Milo
in
the sense of like he's all brawn and brain and you're just like, okay, Superman, we need to make sure everyone is happy with this choice in terms of casting. But with Milo, it's very obvious that like physique wise and things like that, he's very slender, he's nerdy, he's not your
but also like in a way he's so endearing, like you want to cheer for him.
Endearing.
He's got like moral fiber. I hate the word fiber when people say moral fiber. But he's like, he's got backbone. You know what I mean? He's not the most physically imposing, but he's still going to stick up for what's right.
He's going to stick up for what he's passionate about.
He's almost kind
of
a little like little Steve in Captain America, you know? Like, he's kind of got that situation where he's little, but he's got all of like the... Everything that's inside of him is like really big, and he's going to stand up for stuff. He's like skinny Steve.
He's Steve Rogers' dad.
Yeah. I'm okay with that. Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, I really enjoyed Milo, and he's like the main guy. So I think if you don't hit it off with Milo and you're kind of put off by it, then you're not going to be but I'm like, who would not like Milo? He's likable.
He's like Jim Hawkins in the sense that there are times when they, like I said, like they get a little bit.
Can you give me an example?
Of what?
Of when you felt like Milo was pushing towards annoying. Just so I can gauge
just
where
his over exuberance in terms of like the things about Atlantis. And when they like invite him to come over and sit and eat supper with him, and he's just like so dorky. Like, you're uncomfortable listening to him ramble about how he gets to like hang out with the cool crit kids.
See, for me,
and you're just like, this is almost painful.
If I feel painful or I feel awkward in that sense at all, it's because I'm looking at myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Because like that's how it is when I am like super excited about something.
Giddy.
It was so funny. We paused. I was watching with my parents. We paused it for a second. And the scene that we paused it on, I was going to send a picture to Corbin because Milo is in the book. Like, his eyes are really big and he's like pointing at the book and is like reading and so excited. And Rourke's standing there with like his finger on his face, like, please someone shut him up. And I'm just like, this is me. This is me in my life being so excited about stuff that nobody cares about. And everyone else is like, I'm so sick
and
of
this.
And that's
another great example when Helga and Rourke are driving into Atlantis, mm-hmm. and Milo is just freaking out.
Yeah.
And you can feel like just, you're kind of like, oh, okay, Milo, take a deep breath.
And see, but I'm that way. So okay. I can't right. knock him.
So those are my examples.
Okay. Okay.
He was still outstanding.
My first outstanding.
Your second outstanding.
Oh yeah. My second. Yes. You're right. Corbin's going to hate this. I haven't even said it yet and I can feel it.
What?
My first second outstanding is Mole.
Yeah. I didn't rank Mole. So
I
glad
love
you did.
Mole. Everything he says just makes me laugh.
Can you do his giggle? His little...
he like digs the hole. And he's because that's where he time. Sleeps at night. And he's like... And I love it. I think he's so funny.
Now, I know that Sweet said that we don't want to know his story, but I really want to know his story.
Like,
I'm
well,
so
you can't
curious.
Say that because now I'm curious.
I really want to know his story because why is this guy pulling off his clothes, burrowing into the ground?
He's not pulling off his clothes. He has cute stripy pajamas on.
No, at the very end. The very end, they're all dudded up because...
And he gets
into the pot. And
oh
so,
my gosh, yeah, he does.
He totally forgot.
That's so funny.
But I want to know what happened to this guy.
I love when he's up in his bunk bed. He's like, you have disturbed the dirt. And he's got like his binocular eyeballs sticking out of the covers. Corbin, I know he's weird for you.
I
and
like
that's
him.
Okay.
I like it. I just didn't rank him because, yeah. I mean,
he just makes me giggle. I love when he's got his little teddy bear and he's like, oh, you're so cute. Because he's like walking by in his PJs.
He's shuffling by.
And he has that moment where they're trying to, everyone's like, oh, yeah, somebody should go talk to the princess. And he's like, I will do it. I will go.
I just
got Robert Clary vibes from Hogan's Heroes. The little Frenchman who's
absolutely.
Always like.
That's a great example.
He wants to go, always thinks he's so charming as the Frenchman.
Le Beau.
Yeah. And woo the women.
Yes.
But it's always Hogan. And he's like,
He gets his opportunities.
So he had a little bit of Le Beau in him.
Check out Hogan's Heroes if you've not watched that.
Oh
before.
My gosh. Fabulous.
Great show.
Okay. Who is your next outstanding if you have another one?
I have another one.
Okay.
I have at least two.
Okay.
My next one is Mrs. Packard.
Oh my gosh. I love Marge. Do I have Marge? I do.
No,
Marge.
Is it Marge, her friend that's on the phone?
Oh, it is her friend that's on the phone.
So Miss Packard is, I don't even know what her position is. She's the...
Communications. I would say she's in charge of communications.
She is hilarious.
She's the grumpy old woman.
Everything she said, I think, is a beautiful quote.
I think so, too. She's in my satisfactory only because, again, we're back to Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, where if we're making, there were people that
had to be. Outstanding and Miss Packard is, who do you quote more? It's definitely Miss Packard.
She says the same line every time. All she says is, we're all going to die.
No, she doesn't say that. Share your quotes. What other quotes does she have? Didn't you?
That's all she's that. No, she says other things. But my point is that, like, I loved a lot of characters, but again, I was trying to play by the rules. And so some of them had to, like, inadvertently get knocked down. All right. Anyways, explain Miss Packard to me.
Well, whoever took the L from the motor pool side, ha ha, we are all very amused.
Motor poo. You know what I love about that? Is it's that childish humor that's like almost potty humor, but because they don't actually say motor poo,
yeah,
it's not in your face, you know what I mean? Like, if you're not paying attention,
so now it is.
You'll miss it, and you're sitting there and you're like, oh, that is funny. You know what I mean? Anyways, go on.
Well, you can see any adult doing the same thing and being like, think it's the most the funniest thing ever. So it's not childish. It's just so dumb. Oh, but her just tone is great. I love that she's obviously they're under attack by this machine, and she's talking to her friend about he took his suitcase. Marge, honey, I don't think he's coming back.
Marge, honey, I don't think he's coming back.
Gotta go. No, I'll call you. Just, I love anything she says is a beautiful thing.
She brings a really nice humorous pace. Like you said, you have these moments where things are escalating and it's getting dangerous and it's kind of scary, like that giant Leviathan lobster thing, big and scary.
Yeah.
But you cut away to her and she brings like a little bit of humor and like brings the escalation down just a little bit, so you're not getting over frightened. Does that make sense?
And it's believable because in her position, you could see someone just being like so apathetic and I don't care. I'm just here to do my job.
I love when she says she sleeps in the nude.
Yes.
And he's like, you're going to want these. She sleepwalks. And he's got like his little eye covers.
Yes. I love Miss Packard. Way to go.
I'm glad you brought her up. Because, like I said, there's so many good characters to quote and to love in this movie. And she just, my last outstanding goes to Kida. I really like Kida.
Ooh.
I like her visual. I like how they gave her white hair.
Okay. She is 8,000 years old.
She is 8,000 years old. But she had that hair when she was little, too. I like her voice a lot. And I like the Atlantean accent that they gave everybody. I don't know if it's like consistent, but it just sounded right. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's like, yeah, she's from somewhere else.
Okay.
Here's the thing, though.
There can't be a thing. It's outstanding.
That's true. There isn't a thing.
Okay.
But there is a thing. I like Milo and Kida separately a lot. Do I like them together as a couple? I'm kind of on the fence. I'm not swayed either way. Does that make sense? I'm just kind of like, oh, sure. Whatever.
And then Steve Rogers. There you go.
If it was Steve, that would be... Everyone knows my feelings on Steve. No. And so anyways, so it's kind of like the Beauty and the Beast thing where it's like, yeah, they're great separately.
Boo.
Together, it's like, okay. It's not my favorite. It's not my least favorite. I wouldn't like put them on like a favorite couple or most underrated couple situation.
Kind of in the middle.
Yeah, they're
pack.
Just
kind of
there.
Okay. Yeah, they are a forgotten couple. I didn't even think of them as a couple.
Exactly.
I think they're still friends. They might date for a few months and then realize, you know what? This is kind of weird. You're more like my sister or like my cousin than actually someone that I'm want to date.
And I love her queen look at the end. I think her like really awesome robe and the way her hair is with like the feathers in it. And I like it. I like the queen look.
Okay. All right. Okay. I put Kida as satisfactory.
Okay.
I don't know why. I don't have a reasoning for it. I probably should have come up with something, but just as I was watching her, she wasn't my favorite, just female character.
Okay.
It felt like sometimes she was, okay, I'm talking my way through this,
okay.
So let me lay back.
Okay, brace yourselves,
everyone.
So
there were times when she was talking and asking questions to Milo, which is natural. She's very curious about what's going on in the world and where they came from, all these things. But it almost verged on like uneducated a little bit.
Naive.
But they were so sophisticated as a civilization that it felt like she was bouncing back and forth.
I don't know. I feel like the questions she was asking were very legitimate. Like, what is the world like now that we're not, like, that we've been gone for thousands of years? What is your world like?
But she seemed, you know what I mean? She seemed like childish and like giddy, and she's so old.
Corbin's like, we don't do giddy.
No,
here.
No. I felt like she, in some ways, she seemed very poised. And yeah. In other ways, she would flip to the other extreme of being like, just kind of like, oh, tell me more. I want to know this, blah, 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 blah. And it was just like,
essentially, okay. If anyone shows any enthusiasm in this movie, there's like a limit to Corbin's welcomeness of enthusiasm.
I just thought there was a little bit of flip-flopping.
I think it's interesting to kind of trace this period of the, that's kind of considered me. Disney movies, there's some really interesting things they're trying to do with female characters. I mean, if you look like Mulan and Jane and Kida, like, you have this character that's not the traditional princess, but in its own, but they're almost feel forgotten to me, especially like Jane and Kida, where you're like, these are awesome characters. Like, these are female characters that are different, and they're not like overtly feminine, but they're like curious and intellectual, and they have like a really cool thing. And then it feels like we've kind of swung back into the princess zone. You know what I mean? And they've like taken the princess and combined it with like Jane, and then you end up with like a Rapunzel. So it's just interesting to kind of trace how they're kind of like working through the female character at the moment. And then you have like a character like Raya, who is...
I don't know her.
You haven't seen... Okay, I won't say anything.
I haven't seen
then.
The dragon... Raya princess.
So it's just interesting to like consider the ebbs and flows of trying to figure out characters in different time periods, as it is with any animation.
And I think all are okay, right?
Oh, I'm not saying they're not.
No, I'm just in generally speaking, people are very quick to point out certain princesses and be like, these are flaws and problems with them. And I'm like, every princess should have different personalities and different
things.
This
is a continuation of our Snow White discussion, yes, everyone. Is. So anyways, yeah, I liked Kida. Because I felt like she was unique.
What's her full name? Do you know?
Kidaga Shnaga. No, that's what Milo calls her. I don't know.
Kidaga Kosh.
Okay, Kosh. Excuse me. And I like the name Kida.
Yeah, Kida's good. Yeah, I'd get rid of the Gaga Kosh.
Okay. On to Satisfactory.
All right, Satisfactory. That was one of mine. Satisfactory, Kida.
And you're going to hate me. I have Vinny and Satisfactory. I just want to talk about Vinny, and even though I loved him, like,
why would I hate you for Vinny?
Because I didn't put him outstanding, but I had to be mean and put some children down.
All right,
so he ended up in the down. I think Vinny is so funny. I love his deadpan. He really is deadpan. And I remember when I was younger, I loved his jokes about like nitroglycerin and. How he created a bridge in like 10 seconds.
And his story about the flower shop.
Uh-huh. Boom. No more Chinese laundry. It still holds true. Vinny still held up for me, and I still enjoyed him.
Okay.
Vinny.
That's fair.
Got a nice haircut. Nice bowl cut situation going on.
It is an interesting haircut.
And it's 1918.
I'm curious about like Milo's haircut.
1918.
The dreads.
They're not dreads.
No, but the way that they animate them, they're big chunks of hair.
Oh, yeah. We're definitely not at the Brave stage where it's like individual hair follicles.
This team of 50 people is drawing this one person's hair.
Yeah.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah, I liked Vinny.
Okay. Satisfactory for me. Cookie.
I love Cookie.
Cookie the
he
cook.
Didn't make any of my things, but I'm glad you brought him up.
Yeah, he's just satisfactory. There again, I wouldn't put him outstanding.
I would.
You got your four basic food groups.
But he's holding up three fingers.
Yeah. Beans, bacon, whiskey, and lard.
The only time Cookie went overboard for me as a child, I loved the scene. Now watching it this time, it didn't fly. It was the United States. I got your
38 United States.
Yeah, and he's making them dance.
Dance, Rhode Island.
Yeah, that was a
you didn't like that?
It pushed a little bit for me.
What?
I don't know.
One of them bugs who bit me on my set apart.
I love that line. Someone's going to have to suck out the poison.
No, don't everyone volunteer at once.
Oh, Cookie is really charming.
That's really funny that the tattoo scene really bothered you.
It didn't bother me. I just remember loving that scene as a child. And now as an adult, I'm kind of like, as funny as I remember.
The most repulsive thing probably in the whole movie is just looking at his cooking. The slop that he, and the way he
describes
it. It'll
describe, keep and keep.
And the grease that he gives to Milo. Oh my goodness, that you're just like, whoa.
Well, if he's making setup out of beans, whiskey,
bacon,
and lard.
Yeah, that's probably the most disturbing part of the whole movie. So,
okay. My next satisfactory is Audrey, again with the female character thing. I think Audrey is a really fun character. And I noticed this time around. You have to kind of play they were trying to play with the, you're playing with people who live in essentially the 1920s, 1918. And a lot of these people are outcasts. You would never in a million years have a woman engineer in 1918. But I mean, this is essentially a crew of mercenaries. So you're kind of just grabbing people from wherever you can get them who want money and need money. And so for that, for me, like thinking of like the historical context, I think they played with Audrey's character really well of how do you get a 16-year-old girl to be an engineer? And how does that fit within the context of the 1920s?
Mm-hmm.
I think they did that well. And I always loved her as a young girl. I loved her like two for punching. Or two for flinching, not two for punching.
Two for punching. More
making
punching.
Up my own lines. Two for flinching. Yeah, I liked Audrey. I think she's cute.
She was cute.
Got an awesome look. Boys, news cap, overalls. And I love at the end how she's the first one that gets out of the truck and is like, this is
wrong. She stands up to Rourke.
Yes. I loved that.
Yeah, that is always a touching
I'm
moment.
I'm like,
it's not about the money, kids. It's
good
about
girl.
Standing up for your friends.
And her family doesn't have anything, so money could mean a lot to her. And she finally...
Obviously, she's doing fine now.
Yes, she is.
I always missed that part as a child. I didn't realize that they actually got a bunch of money from the Atlanteans. And I was like,
yeah,
that's a lot of dough.
Yeah. They made the money back. It all came back around.
They all good now.
They all good.
All right. Do you have any more satisfactories?
I do have one more.
Okay.
And I have a feeling this is in your needs improvement.
All right, probably.
My last satisfactory goes to Rourke. As a villain, I was good with it. He wasn't my favorite. He wasn't my least favorite. I like James Gardner's voice.
What?
I really
like
James Gardner's voice.
Yeah, his voice is phenomenal.
And I love James Gardner anyway. So, I mean, that probably helped a little more than it should have.
What's a bad villain, though? That's the hard thing is I have a hard time. Like, some villains, they creep you out. They're scary. They're not so scary. They're goofy, weird. Villains are hard to rank because Rourke is really creepy.
He is. I like what they did with Rourke in the sense of you don't know he is how crazy he is until the very end. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It gave me Clayton from Tarzan vibes where he's kind of there and then you start to understand like, oh, okay. And by the end, you're like, this guy has lost it.
Yeah, he spirals out of control pretty quickly.
Yeah.
It's pretty creepy, that last scene where he turns into that, I don't know what
that's what I'm, the blue thing.
That's
when he
nightmarish
gets cut by
right
the,
there. You're really on the verge of, let's look away. At
yeah.
34 years old because I want to sleep well tonight.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And then
you.
He gets chopped up into, I mean, Indiana Jones-esque.
Yeah.
Like they were really pushing it there. Not obviously to that degree, but they really took that up a notch in this movie. With
the villain death scene in this movie is...
And with Helga as well. When she like, I was jeepers, creepers.
Anyway, yeah.
That was tense.
I liked the, I really tried to pay attention. Because
okay, that's good.
To like the sense of, because I think as a child, I didn't quite understand like the politics of like what, why does Rourke end up, but this idea that they're mercenaries and for him, this is all about the money and it's all about, we're going to try and get this power source and we're going to sell it to the highest country, the highest bidder. That, and like, I've been studying a lot about World War I. So that really landed for me because I was like, yeah, you have all these countries who would be like, we'll pay a lot of money to be a world power and like give us an energy source like that. So for me, I liked that idea of it. And I think his character in that sense was like written well in the context of the world. And I liked the subtlety of him becoming the bad guy.
I just didn't like his face. I don't think
I didn't like his face.
The way they animated him,
okay,
just didn't. He just was always grinning and
grinning. The way you talk about him, it's like he's a clown. He's not.
That's
always
my point.
Grinning.
He was always grinning. He was always like, his voice was awesome, but the way they animated him and things like that, I was just like, eh. Like I don't really.
So it didn't translate for you.
It didn't translate
visually.
Well. Yeah, so that's why I put him in needs improvement.
Okay. Who's your, anybody else that needs improvement?
I have a couple more.
Okay. Well, what do you got?
So I also had Vinny in Needs Improvement. And the reason why is because I remember him being a lot funnier when I was younger.
Okay.
I would watch him. And
he was
I,
like
we
Cookie
quote,
for me.
He would, we would quote him like all the time.
Yeah.
And then I watched him this time and I was like, he's really, I mean.
He's subtle and deadpan.
He's just. Not he wasn't quite as funny as some of the other
okay
characters.
So your childhood nostalgia had kind of built him
kind of,
up a little.
Yeah, it
okay.
built him up. And then the last needs improvement is Helga.
I'm curious to hear about why you have her needs improvement, because I have her in there for a very specific reason. I'm assuming you just didn't like the sultryness. Do you want me to say mine first to kind of give you a minute? Blank airtime.
Yes.
Marvin. Okay. I wanted to like Helga a lot. I think I love her look. I think she has a really cool look. And I like the image of like this woman in the 1920s with like the trench coat and the tall boots and like the black turtleneck. Like I'm liking this image. However, my problem with Helga is I felt like there were glimpses of her being somewhat sympathetic and not being a bad person. But in the end, you're like, oh no, she's full blown. Just, you know what I mean? So I just feel like it wasn't clear to me as a viewer as to like, what are her motivations? Because they kind of kept having these moments where she almost had a conscience, where she was like, Rourke, this changes everything that there's people down there. And he's like, no, it doesn't. And then there are like times in her face where you can tell like she's kind of torn, but then she ends up going full blown villain. And the when she's around people, she's just like bad guy. So she needed improvement in the sense of I needed clarity about like, where is this character going to land? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Because at the very end when she's fighting Rourke, she was like screaming at him that they were partners and he promised that it just, I just hate the monologue, but or the discussion
you
during
never
a fight.
The discussion.
I hate that, but it just made her seem a little like she's this hardened criminal, and then all of a sudden she was so trusting and so offended that Rourke would do this when in,
yeah, in it was kind of like
it was a little out of control there. So they
though
they
I
lost,
I
they
did
touch.
Like this idea of like her blowing him up. You know what I mean? Because I think it's
nothing personal.
Yeah, I think at that point you definitely are like, okay, she is all in for herself.
Oh, dear.
But I just felt like her character arc could have been a little clearer, and I wanted to like her more because, like I said, I mean, she's really like she's awesome. Come on. She's
well,
really cool.
I
but
bet mom loved her when they when
oh,
you
I'm
first
sure.
Meet her. Like the slit on her dress. Just like,
yep.
Whoa. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
My question, I mean, and I have questions about her character. Like, how did she end up working for Whitmore? And like, what?
Who was Whitmore?
And Whitmore was another one of those characters that I had a needs improvement just because I'm like, how could a guy who had, he seems like a really good person. Has a good relationship with Milo's dad. Like, he seems like a genuine, he's trying to help. How did he end up hiring these people that, it felt like, isn't there, what other movie is it where they hire?
Treasure Island, Treasure Planet.
Yeah, where they hire a crew and you're like, who hired,
who
these,
hired
people?
These people? That's what Kermit the Frog says. Who hired this crew?
Yes, in Muppet Treasure Island.
Yes.
Yeah, it had that feeling of like, how in the world? Like, Helga's like her boss and
I guess
what?
When you're doing such undercover like adventures like this, where the death rate is probably like 95%.
Yeah, you have slim pickings and you got to take
you're just
what
taking
you can
whoever
get.
You can get. Like half these guys have death sentences, you know.
Yeah.
So
prison records.
But still, I agree with you. It's like this is a consistent theme. If you're wealthy and you're hiring people to work for you, I would probably invest a little bit more time into who you hire.
I will say this. These people, like, I need to learn from them in terms of, like, being able to nail a job interview. Because I feel like these people, like, Rourke, are you kidding me? He probably, like, went in, was like, this is the plan. Nobody's going to get hurt. It's all going to be great. But underneath, he's like, wah-ha-ha-ha-ha. So.
I wonder. I think he flipped that switch pretty quickly. I think he went from ambitious to maniacal and crazy pretty quickly. I mean, literally, he's trying to take care of Milo, and it's very evident that the balloon is coming down to the earth, that he's going to die, and yet he is doing whatever he possibly can to destroy Milo.
I think what helped transition, that switch for me, is when Milo and Kida come out of the water and Milo refuses to help them. You can see he's getting annoyed. He's like, okay. He's like, I've put up, I mean, think of what you don't like about Milo. He's like, I put up with a lot of you. Yes. Like, you broke my truck. You've been talking my ear off and I'm really annoyed. Oh, and now you're going to stick up to me. Are you kidding me? And he ends up, and then he ends up being the one that like convinces half of his crew to not follow him. And so I think there were enough seeds along the way that it wasn't too drastic for me. But I mean, would you rather have that or like a Snow White where it's just like evil? And you're like, what is wrong with this lady?
It's more comforting to have straight up evil than someone that is like.
I don't think villains are supposed to be comforting. I don't think that's the point.
No, when you're watching a film, like I like Snow White, the queen villain. Like I would want to live next to the queen as a neighbor,
yeah,
than Rourke.
Because you know what you're getting.
Because Rourke would be like, oh, I'll help you fix your fence. I'll help you fix your car. And then all of a sudden he like steals all your money.
I think characters like Rourke can make us feel uncomfortable because he's human enough that we're like, whoa. That we can kind of see where the ambition comes from and we can see what road he gets on and how it gets him where he's going. Yeah. And it's not a road that's unfamiliar to a lot of us. Like ambition and needing money is something that we all can relate with. And we're all like, oh, maybe he speaks a little. He's a little more relatable, I'd like to admit.
Yeah. I hope we're not surrounded by Rourkes.
Anyways. Okay. Are we ready to move into some reviews?
Let's do some reviews.
If we didn't talk about character, know that I probably really enjoyed them. I mean, Sweet, awesome, loved Sweet, but we just don't have time, so maybe next time.
Maybe next year.
In the
Sweet
sequel. Rate the reviews, Corbin. What do you got?
Okay, I've got a smattering of reviews. This was all over the board for me. Which isn't super surprising, but
I found it interesting that like when you Google this movie, like the IMDb rating is like 69 and then it's like 6 out of 7. But like Google users rate it. It's like in the 90% approval. And I'm like, I'm confused. I'm getting mixed messages.
Yeah. So one review, this is titled Shocked, 10 out of 10 from 2020, February.
Shocked.
One of the most underrated films of all time. This movie will simply leave you on the edge of your seat throughout. I had never even heard of this movie until recently, which I agree with this review because it does move along very well.
It's adventure movie,
there's
man.
Not like a 20-minute just dry spell where you're like, what is going on? It goes quickly
and
it's fun. It's a lot of
fun. It is so much fun.
Yeah.
I agree. I actually had to pick up, I wanted to bring in a review from a critic who reviewed this movie at the time. Because I thought this was interesting. He says, it's a solid addition to the Disney canon, but from the directors of Beauty and the Beast, solid ain't good enough. Classic Disney, this is not. I feel like I wanted to bring this up because this is from William Thomas, who was writing for Empire Magazine. I thought it was interesting after I listened to the making of where the directors and everybody was explaining this idea that like Walt Disney pushed himself. He never, ever did the same thing twice and he would move on to other things. And in that sense, I'm like, you know what? Atlantis is probably more in the Disney tradition at this time and place than doing another traditional Disney musical. So for him to say that this is not Disney is to say that like in essence is if you're a Disney film fan, you need to get comfortable with innovation because that's what Disney is pushing it.
To that point though, there's something for me that is really missing from this movie.
You wanted the musical, didn't you?
Yeah, I wanted, Milo and Kida doing this dance and song
being
together.
Like, I love you.
Swimming through the water.
Yes, I do.
Reading all this historical background. Singing the historical background.
There's fish bobbing in who are like, la, 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 la.
Fountains of water. The big thing was missing from this movie that I thought was noticeable was there was nothing emotionally connecting for me. Like there was no moment where I am concerned about Milo. They overcome something and people accept him. Mm-hmm. Like there was nothing emotional about it.
Yeah.
So I would say in that sense with Disney, even though he tried lots of different things and it was innovative, he always, I think, did a very good job of connecting emotionally with the audience. And this movie missed the mark.
To the point of what about like a movie like Swiss Family Robinson? Because we reviewed that movie earlier this year. That is an adventure movie through and through, and we both really enjoyed that movie. Is there that emotional moment in that movie?
You know
that
who does it? The dad does it in that movie.
Oh, okay. We did.
He's
talk
a character
that
you connect with in that movie, and you respect.
I will say this: this is where I feel like Treasure Planet really marries that high octane adventure with the emotional moment. Jim Hawkins and Long John Silver's relationship in that, plus the music that they brought in from the Goo Goo Dolls, really like it solidifies the emotion. So I'm with you in that sense. I'm starting to understand that more. I just felt like, I think it's funny when we feel like we get to decide what is classic Disney, and you're just like, look, just because there's no music doesn't mean it's not Disney. And they had just come off of Hunchback and Lion King. And so I'm sure it was a little jarring, but
yeah.
Okay, Corbin.
My second
review,
5 out of 10, don't think is the subject line.
Oh, jeez.
It said, I enjoyed watching this Disney offering. I only grew angry at some of the salties after thinking about it afterwards, like some of the story plots, how they rushed through where Atlantis came from, the power source, those types of things.
Yeah.
So they basically just said, do not watch this movie with much thought, which I think is very good.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, you can pick the plot apart. You can ask questions
that will
drive you crazy.
Yeah.
And I think this is a great way of saying it. So again, this person liked it. They gave it 5 out of 10, but they just say, don't spend much time worrying or thinking about it. Just go along with the ride. It's an adventure movie, which I think is good.
Which, I mean, again, I just love people who like come to movie theaters with notes.
I do.
And I'm like, I know you do. And it is one of the things that like we're similar in a lot of ways, but I'm also like, Corbin, you've got to let the movie just go. Let it wash over you and don't stress. My next review is, it says nice to look at, but it's incredibly boring. And it's the most awkward Disney movie I've ever seen next to Treasure Planet.
Awkward.
And I'm like,
wow, what's that mean?
Is Treasure Planet awkward? And I don't think this movie's awkward. I mean, Milo's awkward.
Did they say anything else?
No, that's
it. We need to follow up with this fella or gal.
Most awkward Disney movie.
Awkward. What would be awkward? I think, you know what? Some people.
I don't know. Can we think about like Chicken Little and like Home On? Like, I think there's other awkwardness.
There are people out there that Milo Thatch type characters, it makes them very uncomfortable.
Yeah, but what about Treasure Planet?
Treasure Planet.
If that's in the same vein for them.
I wonder if it was.
I'm wondering if for them it's the growing pains that they were going through with like the CGI and stuff.
Yeah, I think this might be a personal, this deeply rooted in some personal issues where you start to see yourself in these characters.
You're like, stop it. I'm feeling things.
Oh my gosh. I was at a camp out one time and the cool group invited me over to sit next to the fire.
And I spilled my food all over me.
And it was so dramatic. It was so awkward. This movie is the worst. Like, wait, okay.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting word. I didn't quite know what to make of that.
No, that is interesting. Okay.
Okay, Corbin, your next one?
Okay, this is my last one. 2 out of 10, boring. From 2001. So this is like right after the movie came out. It says, boring, dumb, choppy animated tale by Disney. The premise is noble, but the script is completely ludicrous. How can the Atlanteans know French and English when they were sunken before these languages were invented? How can Atlanteans age insanely slower than us? Blah, blah, blah. So this person obviously was not happy and had a notebook full of notes after watching this film.
Okay,
which,
the languages,
don't do it.
The languages were explained.
Yes, it was.
The aging was not explained. But again, like, I'm okay with that. I love when people, like, it. Think of Disney's other movies.
Oh, here's the thing, though, with this review. They said the only way it avoids a 1 out of 10 is because every once in a while the old lady would elicit a chuckle or two.
Oh, Mrs. Packard saved the film.
From a 1.
And you want to know why? Because she is the cynic through the whole thing.
Yeah.
She's the one who's just like, this is so ridiculous.
That person connected with this.
They're
part.
Like,
he's like,
yes.
Exactly. If I was in your shoes, I'd feel the same way, honey.
We're all gonna die. Oh my goodness. I have a few more, but I'm just gonna kind of like skip through their highlights.
Let me sum up.
A Disney bomb that happens to be one of my biggest guilty pleasures. I was like, good for you, kindred spirit. This person again says not a traditional Disney movie, which.
Yeah, agreed.
It's not traditional, but what is traditional?
It's probably like princesses or musical.
Again, like,
that's,
we, I mean, I'm,
we need to get
like,
outside that.
I like when they stretch.
Yeah.
I like when they stretch.
Yeah.
Perhaps Disney's worst film since The Black Cauldron. We have reviewed Black Cauldron.
This is not on the same
this
level.
This is not on the same level. That's... I think we can agree. And this is my last review from January 22nd, 2013. The best part is the ending because it's finally over.
That's not true.
I think
the concept is great. The animation's interesting. It's just a fun adventure. Stop
I do like the animation style.
That's coming from a thinker.
I know. I'm like, can we get that on recorded, please? Stop thinking. Corbin said it, not me.
Remember, I need to watch all these movies when I'm like 6 years old. I'll enjoy them later.
Yeah.
So now that when I watch some of these movies, I'm like, what's wrong with this movie?
Just as kind of a side note, like, what was the nostalgia? Like, what was your reaction to this movie? Usually we do this in story time. Sorry, guys. What was your reaction to this movie when we were younger? Because it sounds like we did quote this movie a lot, and you told me you were excited to watch this movie again. So what was it as a child that made you excited to revisit?
I love the adventures. Like, Indiana Jones, without the creepiness and the sometimes gore and weirdness, is cool. Like, National Treasure is a great... Any movie like that that doesn't push it too far is phenomenal.
It's just about a fun time.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
You can just totally check out and just go for an adventure. And then you can go back to bed.
Corbin's
bed.
Like, I will go back to bed now.
I get out of my bed, watch the movie, and I go back. I am exhausted. I went in the ocean and went to Atlantis. And
my
back.
Eyeballs were tired for an hour and a half.
Go back to bed.
Oh my gosh. I'm with you. As a kid, there were parts of this movie that were genuinely terrifying for me, like the lobster. The Leviathan.
That's another thing where you're like, where did that come from?
He's pretty intense.
It's got laser bolts coming out of its forehead and all kinds of crazy.
It's a machine. So. Jiminy Christmas. And Rourke's demise. So this is like, I think this is rated PG, and I think that's a fair rating. This is not fluffy. Didn't somebody last week use the term fluffy to describe Snow White?
Last week was fluffy, this week is awkward.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah.
All right. You want to jump to some awards?
You go first.
All right. Shortest lived awesome vehicle goes to the submarine. That thing was amazing.
That thing was amazing.
It didn't last very long, though.
It didn't.
Boy, it's sitting at the bottom of the ocean.
You
want
to know another thing that frightened me as a kid? Is that really brief scene where the Leviathan is attacking the ship and water's coming into the engine room.
Oh, they shut the door?
And they shut the door and the one guy doesn't make it in.
Yeah, you're like, what happened to him?
Exactly.
A lot of people.
My claustrophobia, drowning fears start coming in.
Yeah, that's... we're not getting in that machine. That's why in Disneyland, when we get Camry in the submarine, we're like, believe us, it's not going under the water.
I would enjoy that ride better.
The hatch
it's
is
not
always...
going under the water with a submarine that's hard for me. It's that's a really tight space.
We're gonna
it's
shut
a little
the door.
Claustrophobic. I'm kind of like, I would love an Atlantis submarine ride. That could be so intense.
Oof.
It could be intense. Okay. My first award.
Yes. What is it?
Whoa, villain death award goes to Rourke. I forgot about how he died and was like,
is there like a screaming that he makes? Like, it almost sounds like a velociraptor.
There's screaming. I would say that Clayton's death in Tarzan is a little more so.
Really? You don't even see it. You just see his shadow. Oh, well, he's hacking at the vines.
Yeah, he's hacking at the vines, and you see him fall.
And you know what's
and
happening.
And then you see him hanging there in the shadow. So, yeah, I would say that's a little above this one in shocking terms, but this one is still makes my shocking list.
The lead up to it, yeah. Okay. All right, my award for the worst presenter ever goes to Milo Thatch.
He's like all of us. This is how we all are.
And I love what his picture of him at the beach with like a tube around his waist. And Miss Packard's like, hubba, hubba.
That
was a rocky first impression.
I do love when he's got the map on his...
yeah,
he's trying to hold it up and point on his chest.
Oh, dear.
The opening of this is so charming, where he's giving a presentation and at first you think he's somebody and then you end up in the boiler room.
Yeah.
And I did love, I'm going to give an impromptu award, the best, what would you call that? Like the animated sequence where people run in and out of doors.
Oh, yes.
This is one of my favorite iterations of that trope. is this one where you can hear the guy's little feet scuttling on the marble floors.
Mr. Harcourt, yes.
He's like, let me in.
Who is, by the way, the voice of Cogsworth and Governor Ratcliffe.
Oh, my gosh. Well, he does a fabulous job.
He does a fabulous job.
We'll just add
He's a mean guy, though. He's almost like the...
He's grumpy.
He's almost the villain.
True villain.
But Rourke really steps it up at the end.
He's like, mine. I am the villain.
He grasps victory at the very end.
Get out.
Oh, dear.
Okay. I would like to nominate Michael J. Fox, best vocal performance. For me, he's kind of almost up there with Woody and Buzz, where, like, for me, Milo is Michael J. Fox. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Where we talked about how Woody is Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
Milo is Michael J.
Okay.
Fox.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, got it.
And all I guess he, period, just sorry, he was like 40 when he did 40? Late 30s? He's 18.
Yeah, he's, yeah, yeah.
And he was like the age of the directors when he did this. That's amazing. Anyways.
My dad moment of the movie award goes to Rourke. When Milo is running into camp and everything's on fire and he's screaming, fire, fire. And Rourke is like, I'm going to kill him. Yeah. That's go back to bed.
His hair's all messed up.
Such a dad thing to say when someone is screaming or making lots of noise and is like, just this scowl on his face. I'm going to kill him.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
They animated that sequence and James Garner's voice is so perfect for that little moment. So,
oh my gosh.
Loved it.
That is so good. I do love that. Okay, I'm looking at my awards and I'm like, some of them are like meh meh.
Do you want me to do another one? I got one more.
Yeah, you do yours, okay. And then I'll decide where to end.
Okay, this is my last one. Giving up on life award, Miss Packard. And another quote from Miss Packard is, I love when they're like having this meeting and talking about what they're gonna do, and she's like, Commander, Commander. She's
yes, Mrs. Packard.
She says it four times. No change in her tone. And I was like, wow, she's very patient. No, no, she's not patient. Mm-hmm. She is completely apathetic.
Yeah.
She cares less about nothing. And she's just like, Commander.
I do love the after of that too, where Helga's like, she's like, it sounds metallic. And she's like, do you want to do my job?
So Miss Packard was the star of the show.
That's funny. Okay, my last award is the time period award.
Yeah.
I love this time period.
Yeah, it's a great time period.
This is, and I, yeah, we're exploring other things now, which is great. But I secretly, in my very, very selfish heart, am like, can we have more movies done in the early 1920s? This is such a fun time period. I didn't even mind the puffy pants. Like,
no,
the
all
World
great.
War One puffy pants and the high leather boots, I'm all for it.
We totally skipped this era. We all jump into World War II and beyond, and then before that. But yeah, this is a great era. I love it.
With like the Model T Ford, and everybody's dressed in like the fancy 1920s garb when they get back. Yeah. Give us more.
I like that award.
Okay.
All right. Where's
this? The beast, Corbin.
Yeah.
Where are we going to rank this?
So for me, I rank this fairly low. I was surprised. But after watching this, I was like, again, the emotional thing, it's very quotable. I love the quotes. So I put it in at number 24.
Holy Hannah!
Just below Peter Pan, right above Big Hero 6. I think it's a fun adventure film that I would watch, but there are other films where I'm like, even Meet the Robinsons, I had more of an emotional connection to that. Winnie the Pooh, love that. 101 Dalmatians. So Atlantis, I think it just dropped because I just didn't like any of the characters. I wasn't like, wow,
rooting
that was
for
a touching, cool moment.
Yeah,
so.
I'm with you. I mean, I'm not rethinking my life, but I'm kind of like, what am I doing?
I was expecting this to be like Treasure Planet.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same level.
Okay.
It's not the same level.
I'm actually going to put this
in. Oh boy,
in
here we go.
At number 10.
Whoa, top 10.
Top 10. Here's the deal. I completely agree with you on the emotional front. And for some reason, I didn't realize that until you brought it up, but I'm glad you did. Because it helps me distinguish, like, yes, this definitely is not Treasure Planet.
Okay.
But the time period is like, and number 10 is going to be based solely off of, like, it's my taste. This movie is my taste.
So what is it below? What is it above?
It is below Robin Hood and above Coco.
Okay.
The time period is awesome. The adventure is awesome. Like, there aren't any characters besides Helga that I'm like, and even Helga, like, I loved. So even though I didn't emotionally connect with any of the characters, which usually is a big thing for me, everything else, like the mythology of Atlantis and the just the adventure of the whole thing, it was just for me. This movie was for me. If it had had that emotional connection, it would have ended up higher like Treasure Planet did.
Wow. So I think that is one of the most polarizing films that we've done.
No, Ratatouille. What did you have Ratatouille at?
Oh, yeah. Ratatouille's up high for me. So, yeah, the Ratatouille and this one are very different.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there
which
you
again,
go.
And I think, which we talked about, both of these films, Ratatouille and this one, it's a taste thing. Ratatouille was not for me. This was for me, but I don't expect it to be for everybody.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go, you guys. There's our review of Atlantis. Next week, we're going to do a bonus episode.
Yes. So keep an eye on Instagram. We're probably going to do something that involves discussion with all of you and talking about fun opinions. So keep an eye on Instagram on Monday, and we'll let you know what the topic of discussion is.
All right. Thank you, guys.
This has been another episode of The Neverland Files. Subscribe and review and join the conversation over on Instagram at The Neverland Files. Thanks for listening.